We'll go ahead and call J1 to order. We have the microphone up.
Yes, sir.
As is always, we record these meetings, so if you miss something or want to share it with a friend, you can do that. They're so exciting. I know we're going to have a lot of takers on that. First, we'd like to welcome everyone to Senate Judiciary 1. We'd like to recognize our sergeants at arms. We have Steve Wilson in the back there to my right. We have Donna Blake. Donna? She's not here. We have Ken Kirby. He's not here. And we have Anderson Meadows. He is here. Over here to my left in the back. We appreciate our sergeants at arms. They're the ones who set all this up for us and make sure it runs smoothly. We also have a number of clerks with us, and I'll ask you to stand when I call your name out. We have Eva Barlow. She's actually from Wilmington, but Senator Jackson is her sponsor. It's good to have her with us. She hails from up there in Audreyville, I believe. We have Cody Tatum from Yanceyville, Senator Gunn. Cody, good to have you with us. We have Allison Clark from Raleigh, Senator Bergen. It's good to have you with us, Allison. We have Madison Bell from Lewisburg, Senator Barefoot. Good to have you, Allison. We have Grayson Russell from Knightdale. Good to have you, Grayson. That's Senator Berger again. We have Jordan Smith from Henderson, Senator Bryant. And we have Will Finch from Reedsville, Senator Berger. I tell you, those were easy to pronounce names. Thank you all. Sometimes we have a bit of a tongue twister in some of the names of our pages. Good to have all of you with us. We're going to take probably our pseudoephedrine bill last, and because it is for discussion only. Representative Horn's here with it. If you don't have people lined up, we'll put you in earlier. But I do believe that we're going to skip down, and we'll start talking about House Bill 125. That was Representative Conrad, Representative Haynes bill, entitled Public Agency Computer Code Not Public Record, H-125. We'll go ahead, Representative Conrad, tell us about this exciting bill.
Well, I'm not sure if exciting is the word to describe it, but it is not controversial. In North Carolina, we already have a general statute, 132-1, that defines what is public record, and there are subsections which list the exemptions. And all this bill does is add proprietary computer codes to those lists of exemptions. The concept for this bill came from my county manager, Dudley Watts, back home. He encourages our in-house IT employees to be very inventive and to write binary code that makes government more efficient and more innovative. And he feels, beside the fact that, for security reasons, that there could be a marketable value to this proprietary computer code, and that we could form contractual relationships with private business for financial considerations. And unless we make it an exception to public record, that would be problematic. So this could be potentially an innovative source of revenue for government entities. It's not taxation. And so it passed through the House floor without any controversy.
Do we have a motion there somewhere? Motion for second floor?
Thank you.
Let's not talk ourselves out of anything good. Okay.
I appreciate that.
We have a motion for a favorable report. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. You have
Thank
done
you very
well.
Much.
Thank you, ma'am. The next I have is, I don't see Senator Faircloth yet, so we will go ahead and go to Representative Turner. It's good to have you back before the committee. This is the bottom of the list. That is HB 407, Trustee Attorney Fee, Foreclosure, Clerk Approval, and of course we have a former clerk with us. Tell us about what this is about, Representative.
Thank you. This bill is very simple. It's just a clarification of the Vogler case that was heard before the Supreme Court. That came their way because a clerk had approved attorney fees in a foreclosure matter, and they contested the right of the clerk to oversee those fees. If the clerk has no authority to oversee attorney fees, then no one does, and that would not be a good situation. I have not had anybody contest this bill, and I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Any questions from committee members? Senator Barber. Thank you. I have a motion on the floor for favorable report. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Thank you so much. Good to have you back with us. And it looks like, Representative Horn, we're going to start early on yours. Folks, we're going to move from the bottom of the calendar We've heard items 5 and 2. We're going to move to the top of the calendar. That's the methamphetamine offense penalties. This is for discussion only. There's a potential change to this bill that I think Representative Taylor will probably talk about a little bit. We'll discuss it for a minute, see if any of the other House members show up to run their bills, and we'll go ahead and go into discussion. Representative Horn, good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you. Always like to bring along a little show and tell. Maybe you can find your county. I don't think there's anyone here that does not understand the challenge that we have in North Carolina regarding methamphetamine. You can find your county and see where what's going on. And that's what we're trying to get at with this bill, is to stem this tide. Now, something I want to point out to you very quickly here.
Yeah. What's that cup of water?
Oops. Yes. Very quickly, you can see what's been happening the last few years with methamphetamine labs, methamphetamine incidents. What I want to point out to you, that so far, this year, 2013, we have already exceeded 2010. We're already greater than all of 2010 in meth lab incidents in the state. You can only imagine what it's going to be like by the end of the year, because we're moving into, quote, the season. Warmer weather, more people in the mountains and out and about. The purpose of this bill is to increase penalties for those convicted of methamphetamine abuse, in particular those that are cooking meth in the presence of children, the disabled, or older adults that don't have a choice. I don't need to convince you. You've got pictures of what happens from meth. So I ask your support of the bill. Now, the discussion only part has to do with the fact that one can imagine, if you will, given the points in the bill, that if you're a convicted meth cooker and you get caught some years later in a vehicle, somebody, maybe your girlfriend, your wife, somebody in the back seat has some pseudoephedrine in their purse or pocket because they're having a hard time with allergies. Well, quite frankly, my view is, if you're a convicted meth cooker, you got to know better. But let's say, rather than exacerbate the discussion, we'll say that I'm going to suggest for discussion that we set a limit of 500 milligrams, which is basically 4 tablets, something that you can break off those little sheets that are in the Sudafed container and put a 4 tablet a portion in your pocket or in your purse, what you would expect to use if you were going for a day trip out to the mountains and you might find that you stayed overnight and come back. So trying to be reasonable. And I'm amenable to that amendment if you all so feel. Personally, if you're a convicted meth cooker, then you better be paying attention. And personally, you better ensure that the people you are associated with are aware that you cannot be caught with or in the possession, which would be in the car, in the house, with those tablets that can be made into methamphetamine. So I leave it to you all as to how you would wish me to go forward.
Yes, discussion with me. I'll take Senator Parlin and then Senator Barrett. And Senator Sanderson, did you have your hand up too, sir? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I worked on this bill to get the first law passed dealing with it. My question is treatment for these people, as far as substance abuse treatment, have we found anything that's effective? I've heard that we have not. In your dealings, have you found any kind of way to provide treatment?
Unfortunately, to my knowledge, there's one treatment, and that is don't do it. Because, and I understand, which means there is no treatment. The methamphetamine is the most addictive, I'm going to call it a narcotic. I'm not a pharmacist or a doctor, so I don't know if it's truly a narcotic, but it's the most addictive drug that we know of today. It's a one and done. You try it, you're hooked. You got to have more. the idea should be, we don't want you to try it. For those that have tried it, they've got to stop. They just stop. There's no amelioration regimen of which I'm aware.
And I thank you for this bill, and I agree we have to protect our children and our elderly. But when you see the kind of increase that you talked about, I think we have to talk to the medical community or someone, because it ain't that easy.
Yes.
To just say stop, and that's not reality. So as we go forth, I hope we will try to find some way to help these people learn.
And just to clarify, Representative Horn, this bill actually, it appears it deals with possessing a pseudoephedrine product if the person has a prior conviction for either possession or manufacture. So even if you have a possession, this would mean you can't have more than four.
Correct. If we go with this, with an amendment that we're suggesting. Correct. Pseudoephedrine, as you may know, is the only ingredient you have to have to make methamphetamine. Everything else in methamphetamine you can switch out. Amazing that people stick to stuff in themselves, but they would. So pseudoephedrine, which is found in 15, maybe 14, I'm going to say 15 very popular allergy tablets that are now for sale behind the counter. You have to go in, show your driver's license, they put you into the Inflex system, and the idea there is to put a lid on how much of this stuff you can buy. Now, it's another discussion as to whether that's an effective way of dealing with this issue. I don't think it is, but it's the law presently. Right now, this bill deals with those people that have been convicted of possessing, making, distributing methamphetamine.
Senator Harrington and then Senator Sanders.
Thank you. You made a comment early on about this was the first discussion because there were
right now the bill actually bans any one with a former conviction of possession or manufacturing from having the bill at all. This the proposed change that I believe the bill sponsor would be
agreeable to a change
would actually be to allow four dosage units to be in the possession of any individual as opposed to a complete one. That's all.
And that's
follow up on it. No. Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the chart reference looked at for the first
one.
No, the one without. What happened in 2005? Was there an event that took place between 2004 and 2006?
Yes, sir. That's when pseudoephedrine containing medications were moved from on the shelf to behind the counter.
Okay, so we were headed in a very bad direction before that happened.
Correct.
And now we're going back. What is the criminal element doing in order to get back to where we are now?
Two things have happened since that point. First, most dramatic was the development of what's called, referred to as a shake and bake or one pot method. So instead of requiring a sophisticated laboratory, which in fact it did, it was very sophisticated. Pretty smart people dreamed this stuff up. Well, I don't know about the smart part. Then someone has figured out how if you take a 2-liter bottle and you put in all kinds of ingredients like anhydrous ammonia and Drano, and then add some pseudoephedrine containing medications, and you shake it up, that you can make it in a one pot. The one pot system has caused an explosion, so to speak, in the manufacture of methamphetamine. It's simple, it's easy, it's cheap. The second thing that's happened is that the people that are making this stuff have now utilized what are known in the trade as smurfs. You stand on a street corner, you give the next 10 people $20 and say, do me a favor, go down here and buy some Sudafed and bring it back to me and keep the change. So the tracking system has its challenges. So between those two things, the one pot and the use of Smurfs, this stuff is growing like crazy. The issue is, there are two issues. One is the methamphetamine abuse itself, the addiction. The other is the making of it, where you have the explosions, the very toxic nature of the manufacture of methamphetamine. And that's what affects the children that are in the house, that are in the room, that are in the car, that are in the hotel room, or others.
Senator Sanderson, follow up and send it away.
More of a comment. This is kind of the word where you're talking about compromise for Senator Mitchell. Anytime that we create a loophole in legislation, you're going to have people that are going to take advantage of it for the wrong reason. I've seen too many times in law enforcement, when I was there, how different attorneys came into power because of a loophole. If it could be written in some way to say that on a case-by-case basis, instead of across the board, raising of the limits that might serve our purpose, that would be something we need to do it quickly.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Wade.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify, if the person's in the car and they've been convicted and they have Sudafed in the car with them on another person, then they still can be charged with it.
As I understand the law, that constitutes possession, even though it's not on your person. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I yield to what it is.
There is constructive possession, potentially, if you are in control of the car and it's in the car. If you're in control of the car but it's on another person, typically, no. That's difficult to be able to get the nexus there between you, actually. I would argue vehemently against anyone being held responsible and another person had on it. But if it's dropped in the car, you're possessing the car even though you might not own it. Those are all legal questions we deal with on a daily basis in court, whether it's possession of pseudoephedrine, in this case, or it's marijuana, cocaine, heroin, a bomb. I mean, you know, it's any number. So we deal effectively with that.
So is it the same in the house? You come in a house for some reason?
Well, sometimes houses are subdivided. You got roommates. You have, so again, if it's in a common area, then you've got other questions. Those are all fact-driven cases we deal with. Sometimes they're just jury questions.
One more follow-up. So how would the amendment work then? I don't see the
It would simply say that if you possess greater than a quantity of 4 dosage units, then you're breaking the law if you've been convicted of possession of methamphetamine before, or either possession or manufacture.
My last follow-up is I don't see the need for that amendment if a person's in there with you and they actually have it, or someone slides it over to them, they're probably going to get off anyway. So I wouldn't see the need to say that the person that's been convicted should have any. Okay. I mean, that's just my first one.
Sure. And we can bring that as an amendment, and the committee is welcome to consider that. That's fine. Any other questions from any committee members? This is a discussion item on the agenda. Anything else? Thank you so much, Representative Horn. We appreciate you being here this morning. We will talk to staff about drawing up that potential amendment and try to put that on the calendar maybe Thursday or next Tuesday.
Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. The next item that we have Representative Faircloth that is with us, Justice Reinvestment Technical Corrections. That is third on your list, HB 361. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you taking time to come and hear this particular bill today. It's a fairly simple one. It's an agency bill and arises out of the Justice Reinvestment Act that was passed a couple of years ago. And as we go along day by day, we find the technical changes that have to be made from time to time. These are fairly simple changes, and as I said, they were requested by the agency. The first section simply amends the regular conditions of probation so that it applies to defendants placed in supervised probation. Section 2 repeals the requirement that as a controlling condition of supervision, a person must submit to supervision of officers assigned to the intensive post-release supervision program and abide by those rules. And we ask somebody from the agency here that could explain that as simply repeal something that allows them to operate the way they need to under the new bill. Section 3 of the bill would rewrite the statute pertaining to duties and powers of probation officers to eliminate a requirement that probation officers each take new probation, on a tour of the prison unit. They found they used to do that, and somebody would put on probation, they'd take them for a visit to get to a prison unit. Sounds good on the surface, sounds like it would scare them to death or whatever. Doesn't seem to work, takes an awful lot of time, and takes an officer out of the, so they feel that should be changed. Section 4 would specify the 90-day period of confinement the court is authorized to impose would be 90 consecutive days. And Section 5 repeals the requirement that the North Carolina Citizens and Policy Advisory Commission submit a particular report that's required to pass and is not felt to be needed. Section 6 of the bill would adjust the maximum sentences by 1 month for certain minimum terms specified. There is a chart in the bill. It's simply a miscalculation was made when the bill was drawn, and there just have to be several little tweaks to add a month here and there. Nothing major. So that's the bill, and I would appreciate your support, and we're glad to answer your questions.
Thank you, Senator. We have a question, Senator Brown.
Section 4 on the 90-day consecutive, how is that? There's been some leeway, I think, on how that can take place now. Talk about that a little bit.
Mr. Holbrook's here.
Yeah. Mr. Holbrook, do we have you? Do we have anybody from DOC, any attorneys? Okay. Tell us what that means and why, because I know that we have given our judiciary the ability, and the probation officers the ability, to be flexible on this when folks are working, seasonal labor, that kind of stuff. So tell us.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm Doug from the Department of Public Safety. And what this is about, there is some flexibility authorized for the probation officer in cases where you're doing 2 to 3 days. This is a situation where someone has violated probation up to the point where they haven't committed a new crime or signed it, but they are, this is a serious response to a violation. This is a 90-day period. This is not a period of up to 90 days. And what the reason for this section is to prevent people from trying to authorize 45 consecutive weekends. This confinement response violation is for prison, so we don't have people for coming and going out of prison. That is, they come in and come to jail, but it's a prison commitment. They need to be there for a few months, just based on contraband and other issues.
Thank you, Mr. Holbrook. Any other questions?
No.
We have a motion to favor the report. Any further discussion, Senator Barton?
The clarification of the repeal under Section 5.
This repeals a requirement by the North Carolina Sentencing and Policy Advisory Commission that was made annually to the General Assembly. And again, Mr. Holbrook can probably explain why they decided that, and I believe.
Yes, Mr. Holbrook, would you like to address why we're able to keep up with recidivism rates for offenders on probation, parole, and post-release supervision participating in programming funded through the Treatment for Effective Community Supervision Program?
I'd be delighted to. The Sentencing Commission does a report every other year on recidivism of all correctional programs. This set up a separate cycle for just for this program, and the preference was it would be included in the whole big evaluation of correctional programs rather than having a separate cycle where they have to pull different groups. And so they take a sample of all convicted offenders and follow them for 3 years. And so they put that program in the same big report with all other correctional programs.
So we'll still get the same information, but we'll save money. We'll be every 2 instead of every year. Okay. Is it a part? Okay. Any further questions? We have a motion on the floor for a favorable report. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Thank you so much, Representative Terry Paul. Yes, sir. Good to have you with us. And we do have Representative Davis on the last bill that we consider today, and that is amend definitions, property classification, and equitable distribution. That is the fourth on your calendar of 5 HB 384. Representative Davis from the Hanover County. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. The proposed bill deals with equal distribution law in North Carolina, which is a division of marital assets and debts. As it presently stands, North Carolina General Statute 50-20B states that it is presumed that all property acquired after the date of marriage and before the date of separation is marital property except property which is separate property under the definitions that set forth in the statute. That presumption may be rebutted by the greater weight of the evidence. The case law in North Carolina states that if during the marriage a spouse deeds real property to the other spouse as tenants by the entirety, that is presumed to be a gift to the marital estate. But that is not addressed specifically in the statutes. So what this bill would do would be to codify what the case law is in North Carolina about a gift of real property between spouses after marriage and before separation, and make that part of the statute. One change, the case law states that that presumption is rebuttable by clear, cogent, and convincing evidence, which is the highest standard you can have in a civil action. Under the statute, when you talk about regular marital property presumption, it can be rebutted by the greater weight of evidence, which is a lesser standard. What this bill would do would make both those standards of proof be the same, that is the greater weight of evidence, so that we make it consistent. The other thing that this statute does, divisible property is real and personal property that is acquired or a change in property that was in existence at the date of separation. And divisible property is from the date of separation until the time the property is actually divided for the equitable distribution. Divisible property in and of itself is passive. Under domestic law, you have active appreciation and depreciation. You have passive appreciation and depreciation. Active would be, for instance, if I have a stock account and I go buy more stock, that's active. But if I have a stock account and that stock account just sitting there appreciates or depreciates, that's passive because I didn't actively do anything myself to increase or decrease the value. What the correction in the, or the clarification that this bill would do in section 4D, under the present law, it just talks about increases. Well, that could be an active increase, which is not divisible property. So simply what this the law would do, the statute would do, is to specifically state passive increases and passive decreases. It's technological in nature, and it clarifies increases so there would not be any ability. But I'd be happy to answer any questions. Sure. Do we have anyone from the bar that would like to speak on that and address anything that the representative has not addressed?
I think Representative Davis...
Can you state your name, please, for the record?
My name is David Long. I'm an attorney here in Raleigh with Joseph Parker, Senator Bryan. I'm the legislative chair of the family law section of the bar. So Representative Davis did an excellent job. I think the only thing I might kind of add to is really we were concerned with some of the court of appeals cases on decreases in marital debt where people were making payments like paying down mortgage after separation, and that was active, but under the statute that the court was treating it, we were still including that in the marital estate, that that reduction in debt and dividing it and giving credit and benefit to the spouse that didn't pay it down. And we think by adding that and clarifying that passive only is to be used here, we'll eliminate some of the results. But we'd really like to thank Representative Davis. He's done a great job working on this bill with us and did a really good job of describing this one.
Thank you. Anything further from any committee members? Do I have a motion? Senator Sanders gives us a motion to adopt the a motion on the floor for a favorable report. Sorry. All in favor? Is any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House has had success today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, members of the board.
I'll see you at home on Thursday.
Thank you,
that is all. Unless there's anything further, we are adjourned.
Jason, do you need any of your papers saved or going to be recycled?
They can be recycled.
Okay. Well,